Hi there, welcome to this edition of the Arts Roundup. I'm Gerwin Jones and real glad that you could join me. Today I'll be bringing you an overview of historic, contemporary and future cultural events taking place in or emanating from our cultivated island of Cuba. I'll be right back. The exhibition, Connecting Spontaneous Expressions, opens on Friday, June the 21st, in Cuba, for the second consecutive year, with the presence in Havana of marginal art projects from Germany and Belgium. Riera Studio, on Marta Abreu Street, or Calle Marta Abreu, number 202, between the 20th of May and Villa Uenda, in the Cerro neighborhood of Havana, has opened its doors to bring the public closer to a new collaboration with international ateliers of art à bruit and outsider art. Connecting Spontaneous Expressions on this occasion will be displaying the projects of Kunstwerkstatt Willjosein from Aachen, Germany, and Kunstatelier Tevona from Hasselt in Belgium. According to the promoters, it will be a dialogue with the results of workshops that take place every Saturday at Art Brew Project Cuba, created by Riera Studio, with the purpose of promoting and supporting singular art expressions in Havana. The exhibition will remain until July the 21st, and visitors will be able to view the works of 27 artists with an aesthetic that never ceases to amaze with its unusual representative horizons. Daisy Pons, director of the Cuban project Cuenta Conmigo, an initiative that seeks to prepare young people with Down syndrome for life in order to make a real inclusion in society, announced that three members of the group will be represented at Connecting Spontaneous Expressions. Art Brut, or marginal art, is a term coined back in 1945 by the French painter and sculptor Jean Dufoufay to refer to art created by people outside of the artistic world and without an academic background. When the U.S. measures against Cuba are being intensified and the visits of Americans to the Finca Vigía Museum, where the author of El Viejo y El Mar lived for more than 20 years, all have been affected by the arbitrariness of the government against the island. Nevertheless, the 17th Ernest Hemingway International Colloquium is going ahead in Havana from the 20th to the 23rd of this month at the Riviera Hotel. Gladys Collazo Usayan, president of the National Council of Cultural Heritage, the CNPC, has outlined in a press conference that, during the colloquium, there will be exchanges with institutions and specialists related to the Ernest Hemingway Museum with the aim of publicizing recent research on the life and work of the famous writer. At the gathering, which is dedicated this time to the 90th anniversary of the publication of A Farewell to Arms, or Adios a las Armas, 30 papers will be presented, of which 20 are from researchers from the United States, also Israel, Argentina, Japan, and Spain. The documentary Hemingway Between Cayo Hueso and Cuba, directed by Richard Abella and shot in Havana and in several locations in the United States, will be screened as part of the program. The exhibition Hemingway's Ark, or Il Arca de Hemingway, by the artist Jorge Pérez Duporte, will also be launched. Participants will visit locations related to the life of the Nobel laureate in Cuba. On Thursday the 21st, a tribute will take place in La Glorieta, Cojima, that will continue on Friday at the Floridita Bar. Saturday will have as a main course a walk through the International Yacht Club, and on Sunday it will conclude with a farewell ceremony at the Ernest Hemingway Museum. The closing of the colloquium by investigators Miriam Mandel and Sandra Spanier will deliver the project of Letters of Hemingway. As part of this, the last volume of the letters that remain of the American writer will be published. The 6th International Music Piano Festival and Contest 2019, organized by the University of the Arts, the ISA, and the Mozartian Lyceum of Havana, began on Monday, the 17th of June, in this capital, dedicated to the memory of the great Cuban pedagogue and pianist Teresita Junco Reyna. The opening concert was held by the young Costa Rican David Saravia at 11 o'clock in the morning at the headquarters of the Lyceum in Havana. The International Music Piano Festival and Contest will go on to host the usual master classes, one of its main attractions, in the daytime from Wednesday to Friday. A very special moment in the program will be the tribute dedicated to the memory of Teresita Junco, 10 years after her death, at 2:30 in the afternoon on Friday. The San Felipe Neri Oratory will host concerts such as those offered by pianists Henry Calder from Holland and Cecilio Tielis from Cuba. Now for something new and interesting in our daily program. For the next month or so, I'm being joined in the newsroom and in the studio by three English language majors from the University of Havana. I would like to introduce Lisbeth Roque Rodriguez. Welcome, Lisbeth.
Hi, James. It's nice to be here today. The topic of the research is the influence of the American culture on Cuban culture, particularly before 1959.
Okay. Now, what did you come up with in your preliminary investigation?
I believe that our culture is heavily influenced by the United States. Even though we haven't had close relations for many years, American culture continues to thrive in our society. Let's take a look back to history to understand this phenomenon. During the 18th and 19th centuries, and particularly as of 1818, when a free trade agreement aimed at developing sugar refineries, cane plantations, and warehouses was signed, U.S. culture began to take root in our country. For instance, during the first period, some civilian and sanitary projects were undertaken in the capital, which included hospitals and schools. The construction of the Malecón Ocean Drive was started, the Central Railroad was established, and the city's streets asphalted.
Major projects. Now, did private businesses also develop in this period?
Yes. Many stores and commercial establishments were built as the city began to develop economically. The store El Encanto, built in 1878, and the Ultra, La Época, and Fin de Siglo department stores all appeared during this time. Moreover, powerful U.S. companies such as the Cuban Telephone Company and the Cuban Electric Company, or in Spanish, Compañía Cubana de Electricidad, established during the colonial times, were set up in Central Havana.
Now, what sort of political and religious ideologies arrived with all of this stuff?
Political, pedagogical, juridical, scientific, religious, and cultural ideas that had originated in the United States contributed to the spiritual texture of the island. The United States brought cinemas, radio broadcasters, television stations, record labels, and architectural projects to Cuba.
Now, were the Cubans pleased with the transformations that took place during the U.S. military occupation? Did Cuban people find it all right that the U.S. was taking control of their country in the political, economic, and cultural aspects?
Certainly, the end of the War of Independence against the Spanish colonial domain at the beginning of the U.S. military occupation were times of internal contradiction and confusion. We could say that Cuba was in a transitional period, the twilight of one century, the dawn of another. In those days, the flag of the United States flew over the fortress of El Morro, and English had replaced Spanish as the official language employed in Cuban government offices. There were different responses of Cuban during the U.S. military occupation. The U.S. cultural invasion was, on one hand, well-received among middle and high classes. Many people were delighted while adopting U.S. cultural patterns. Furthermore, in what seemed like instantaneous transformation, Havana's barberias had become barber shops, and many of the stores on Obispo a principal street in the center of the capital, were suddenly filled with U.S. goods and products. At the same time, high society began to celebrate tea and garden parties, while young ladies liberated from a purely domestic life became known as new women, and took up jobs out in the New World and as typists or nurses in offices and hospitals.
Astonishing. But were there different points of view?
Yes, there were. Other Cubans who realized, as José Martí had warned, that culture, altogether with economic expansion and military and ideological warfare, was, and still is, part of the U.S. goal of world domination, irrespective of who occupies the White House. Cubans longed for the economic and social prosperity of their country, but not at the price of losing their own identity and becoming a colony of the United States.
Nicely said, Lisbeth Roque. We look forward to more from you in the coming weeks. And that's it from us today on the Arts Roundup. I'm Gerwin Jones.